Hey, I'm Michaela LaFrac, the host of Vermont Edition. The podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Enjoy! This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Today on the show, we are tackling one of lawmakers' biggest goals for this legislative session, making it easier to build more housing in Vermont, but doing it in a responsible way. To do this, legislators need to reform Act 250, Vermont's land use law, which dates back about 50 years. Last week, the House passed a sprawling bill to do just that, but there's still a long way for it to travel. Later in the show, we're going to hear from three people who have been closely involved in these discussions. One of the bill's co-sponsors, one of its critics in Montpelier, and the head of the Natural Resources Council. But first, today we're joined by my colleague Carly Berlin. She covers housing and infrastructure for Vermont Public and VT Digger. Carly, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, you can join the conversation as well. What do you think housing development and growth should look like in your community? What are your questions about the work that legislators are doing right now to reform Act 250? Give us a call. Our number is 800-639-2211. You can also email us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Now, Carly, you have been very busy tracking this mammoth bill as it makes its way through the House so far. Can you start by telling us broadly what's in it?
So this bill proposes chopping Vermont into a series of tiers that would then dictate how new development is treated under Act 250. So what I mean by that is right now, broadly speaking, Act 250 gets triggered by the size of a project. So like you want to build X number of apartments, then you need to go through the state level environmental review. But this proposed tier system, it essentially says in some municipalities where there's already development and infrastructure, let's relax Act 250's reach and let new development, housing in particular, proceed without triggering the law. And on the other hand, this bill sets up a process for mapping out new, quote-unquote, critical natural resource areas or places deemed so ecologically sensitive that just putting a shovel in the ground would trigger Act 250. In addition to all of that, you know, that new framework, this bill also overhauls the current body that oversees the administration of Act 250, replacing it with a professional board that would also take up appeals to Act 250 decisions instead of a judge.
Wow. Okay. So a lot of changes here. And there has been a ton of debate about this, right? Like, what was just last week, like?
Yeah. So we saw a 6+ hour long debate on the House floor week on Wednesday evening. Was a long night. There were a bunch of last minute amendments to work through. And not all, but a lot of that debate centered around how much of Vermont would ultimately fall into each of these new proposed tiers and how easy or difficult it might be for smaller towns in particular to earn exemptions for new housing. I should say, too, that, you know, this is the latest iteration of a long-running debate about Act 250, right? For years, critics of this law have argued that it throws cold water on housing development and contributes to Vermont's acute housing shortage by doing things like adding time and cost to every new development process. You know, what we heard Wednesday, you know, about this bill in particular, you know, to get a full exemption from Act 250, municipalities would need to meet a pretty long list of requirements. So things like having local zoning, water and sewer capacity to accommodate growth, you know, enough capacity to review development on the local level, things like that. And we heard on the House floor, you know, some representatives in rural areas say that, you know, the small towns they represent might not be able to feasibly access some of those benefits.
And we're going to be hearing from one of those representatives a little bit later in the show. Carly, how did this vote go last week? Was it largely supported, fly through, or split down party lines?
So it was fairly split. In a preliminary vote on Wednesday, this bill passed with 89 votes for and 51 against. You know, there's some party division here. We're seeing a lot of Democrats vote for it and Republicans against. But I should also say it's not so clear cut. That's often the case with housing policy, and particularly around deregulation to, quote unquote, remove barriers for growth. You know, we don't see policies like that always fall neatly onto party lines.
Yeah. It's interesting because this is such a priority for folks from every party from the very start of this session. And now they're really getting down to the nitty gritty with it. So what were some of the sticking points that you were hearing come up again and again?
You know, so I think one important sticking point to note here is that the tiered framework laid out in this bill would take a few years to go into effect. So this bill, you know, directs some further study in some areas, some rulemaking from the administration, you know, a pretty thorough application process for these exemptions, right? And so some in opposition to the bill have argued it doesn't meet the urgency of the housing crisis we're seeing right now. You know, there are a number of other bills circulating in the state house that take a different approach to changing Act 250. And some of them offer interim exemptions while a longer Act 250 revision process plays out.
Okay. And there, as you said, so there's a number of other bills making their way through, some, you know, doing better than others. This is the one that's made it the farthest so far. Where does it go now?
So this bill will be heading to the Senate next. We're expecting to see it go to the Senate Natural Resources Committee, which is already workshopping another bill that originated in the Senate. So we'll see, you know, I'm expecting to see some of the work of you know, really hashing out the details and differences, you know, happening in that committee room over the next few weeks.
Gotcha. Well, let's go to the phones. And if you have a question about all the Act 250 reform conversations going on in Montpelier right now, or have thoughts on how they might affect your specific community in Vermont, give us a call. Our number is 800-639-2211. Let's go to Bob in Rutland. Bob, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I know there are many people who are deeply concerned about all the Act 250 exemptions, as that's really not a problem in some people's, you know, opinion here in the state. And I was wondering if they are going to address a ban, for example, on short-term rental housing, also ban on hedge fund purchasing of housing in the state, and also address, which we really need in the state, municipal rent control.
Right. Three other major issues. Are those at all tied into this specific bill, Carly? Have you heard about those conversations happening elsewhere in Montpelier?
You know, they're really not, to my knowledge at this point. You know, a lot of the energy in Montpelier right now is figuring out the path forward for Act 250. And so a lot of, you know, in other policies that have come up in sort of housing land, like this is the one that takes up the airtime and the energy in the room. And I've heard, you know, lawmakers say, you know, this is where we need to focus our time and energy this year. And some of those other policies have, you know, been a little bit sidelined or not taken center stage this session.
Okay, so not the number one priority right now. Bob, thank you so much for calling in. And you can also email us with your thoughts about this conversation at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Carly, housing, Act 250 reform, a major priority not just for lawmakers, but for Governor Phil Scott as well. What has he said about this bill?
Yeah, so the governor has said, you know, he does not love the approach that this bill, H-687, takes. He says it would create new bureaucratic hurdles and be detrimental to, you know, particularly more rural areas like we talked about earlier. He also really points out the delay in rolling out these potential new exemptions and basically says, you know, this is not a housing bill that meets the moment. He has signaled his support for S-311, which is another Act 250 bill moving in the Senate right now. That takes up a number of measures from a bill that his administration backed early in the session that hasn't moved forward. So that's where he's, you know, signaled his support you know, for all of these Act 250 bills circulating at this moment.
And, talk us through, this is a very basic logistics question, but there's this bill that just passed the House. You just mentioned another one floating around in the Senate as well. Is it possible that both of these bills progress forward? Could both potentially pass? Or what's the attrition like from here?
Yeah, totally fair question. What I'm hearing is that, so the Senate Natural Resources Committee right now is already talking about this other bill that, you know, originated in the Senate, takes up some interim exemptions to, you know, Act 250. And what I'm expecting to see happen is for this bill that just passed the House to end up there as well. So they're going to have these two bills in front of them and will be tasked with, you know, reconciling the different approaches they take. You know, there's certainly some overlap there, plenty of it. And I think that they'll be hashing out the differences and then, you know, we'll see that process sort of continue to play out as the, you know, the bill hits, you know, the floor for more debate later on in the session.
Yeah. And Carly, what are you going to be watching for in the weeks ahead? Any like big changes that could be coming or conversations that you're particularly interested in as these bills develop?
You know, I think broadly speaking, we entered into this session with this pretty notable consensus. You know, there was a stakeholder process that happened over the summer with lots of different folks who care deeply about the future of Act 250. And, you know, we saw them say, you know, we need changes that both allow for more housing in already dense downtowns, village centers, et cetera. And we want to see Act 250 beef up environmental protections outside of those areas. So big picture, you know, there was a lot of agreement coming in. What we're seeing happen right now is working out all of those details. How do you actually make that tier process work? When does it start? So the question will be, can we see lawmakers hash out their differences, hash out these details, and get to a workable bill that can pass and that Governor Scott will sign off on by the end of the session.
Interesting. And then lastly, Carly, I'm just curious, you know, you've been on the ground in Montpelier in the State House in the way that many of us have not. What's like the tenor of conversation been like there? Have you been surprised or have things been relatively civil as these intense conversations occur?
You know, I think they're heated. I think that people have really strong feelings about this law and how it has really shaped the Vermont that we live in now, right? And there are a lot of, you know, competing visions for, you know, how to change it, how to shape the Vermont we want to see in the future. And I think those, you know, deeply held emotions are playing out in, you know, 6 hour long floor debates on, you know, on the House floor. So I'm expecting to see plenty more of that in the coming weeks.
Well, Carly Berlin, thank you so much for joining us, telling us about this work.
Thanks for having me.
Today on the show, we are discussing Act 250 reform. There is a new bill that just passed through the House last week that would allow new development in some areas of the state without triggering that hefty Act 250 review process that you might have heard about. Now, critics of this bill, like Governor Phil Scott, have a couple of key concerns, including that it wouldn't promote housing construction in rural areas enough. Here to share more is Ashley Bartley. She's a Republican state representative from Franklin County. She lives in Fairfax. Representative Bartley, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you so much, Michaela. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be on.
Glad to have you. And listeners, we are glad to have you here as part of this conversation as well. How do you think lawmakers should reform Act 250, if at all? Give us a call. Our number is 800-639-2211. You can also email us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Now, Representative Bartley, you voted against this legislation in the House that we've been discussing on today's show. Why?
I did. You know, and it's never easy to vote against legislation that your colleagues have put so many hours in. And, you know, I know that from being a legislator and putting equal amount of hours into other bills. But my concern is this bill, when we were hearing about it, when it was coming to the floor, was kind of being touted as a housing bill. I think all of us in the legislature, I think most Vermonters recognize that we are in the paramount of a housing crisis. And this bill, this legislation was being touted was, you know, this is a housing bill. Unfortunately, it's not. It's a land use bill. And so that was my initial frustration with the bill. And as it was presented, as I did more research, I think at the end, the bill had over 130 pages, so it's a long piece of legislation. It became very clear that it would actually make building and developing houses in rural Vermont much more difficult. And I think we're in a place where we cannot put any barriers to building as we try to house Vermonters who don't have houses.
Can you tease that out a bit more for those of us who aren't familiar with that phrase, land use bill? Why do you say it's a land use bill and not a housing bill?
Yeah, so Act 250 was enacted in 1970, so it's over 50 years old. And really what it is how the land, how Vermont land is used, where you can build, where you can't build, what places are conserved, what's not conserved. And a lot of time, and I think this is I don't want to necessarily use the word failure, but failure of the legislator is to put those two things together. I think it's very clear that housing and the land use need to be kind of go hand to hand. And in the past, that hasn't been done. I think we've started to see the shift last year when S-100, also known as the Homes Act, was passed, where all of a sudden Act 250 and housing policies were put together. But even as that was another Senate bill that came to the housing, but even then when that happened, we had to split out housing and the land use portion of it went to the Committee of Environment and Energy. So I say it's not a housing bill because it didn't even go through general and housing. We didn't talk about any housing policies, how to promote smart growth. Really what it is it's just land use.
Now, what about this tiered system that the bill would create? Three separate tiers that different communities across the state would be put in that kind of govern how that development review process would go for them. What are your thoughts about how that tier system is shaping up?
Yeah, you know, I personally think that a tier system works very well with Vermont because not every town, and I can tell you, every resident of every town is very different, and they like their town and how their town does it. So it's smart to have different options for different towns. The unfortunate aspect of the bill with these tiers is Tier 1A is where there's going to be the most meaning. So really, Tier 1A is the most meaningful tier for exemptions. However, it's just not overly attainable for most communities. It's great for Chittenden County, but really the rural parts of Vermont, that tier is going to be incredibly difficult for communities to fall under. And it becomes burdensome for those communities to have the expertise to implement some of the requirements that the wildlife protection bylaws are required in this legislation. And additionally, in my understanding is when asked about, you know, what towns fall under what tier, we don't know. And I definitely have some discomfort with not knowing what towns fall where. And the explanation that was given to me was that, you know, each town can choose whether they want to implement these different administrative aspects of the bill to go into Tier 1A or Tier 1B. And unfortunately, a lot of those really small rural towns just don't have that capacity, whether they want to build and develop or not.
Hmm. Well, you're from Fairfax.
Yes.
Do you think that small municipalities like the town of Fairfax have the staffing, the capabilities right now to manage larger development projects?
You know, I think some do and some don't. I know that with this bill, I spoke to our town manager about this bill and said, you know, here's the bill. What's it going to look like for Fairfax? And this bill will make it very difficult to build in Fairfax. We actually, the issue that Fairfax will face is that we don't have the water and sewer capacity in town. So the only way is to build out or to build up. And because we are a smaller town, we don't have the necessary fire equipment to build up, which makes this bill very difficult for us to develop in Fairfax. But after speaking to many of my constituents, they do want to build. They do want to see growth. Fairfax is one of the towns that have, in the last decade, have seen the most, I think they're top 10 in the most growth. So we see that change in what's needed. I just don't necessarily think this bill will help with that need.
Now, Representative Bartley, you also co-sponsored another bill that took on Act 250 reform. It didn't make it through crossover day. I am curious, though, if you've seen any overlap between what you were working on and most excited about with that effort and either this bill or the one that's making its way through the Senate. Any overlap that does make you feel hopeful, like there are steps being made that you do believe in?
Yes and no. So for 687, there's really wasn't much overlap besides the fact that both bills use a tier system. I was excited that the Elders Amendment did pass in the House when it was presented on the floor. And really what that was offering very modest extensions to a sunset that came from S-100. So it extends the temporary exemption for the up to 24 units of housing that we saw in S-100 in designated areas. So it went from a 10-5-5 rule to 25-5 last year. And we just extended that to December 31st in 2026. The second part of that was a temporary exemption for priority housing projects in designated areas. So things like that were, I was really happy to see get amended to the bill, because I think there are very important aspects that will help build housing. As for S-311, I'm very excited about that bill. I'm really hoping that the Senate Natural Resource Committee keeps a lot of that in, because it took a lot of H-719, which was the tripartisan legislation that addressed housing and land use that is still on the wall in the House. And so it actually took, we were able to go in and provide testimony on the ideas in that bill. And a lot of those ideas actually moved forward in S-311, which actually passed out of that committee unanimously. And the excitement that I have, and the thing that I had mentioned earlier, is that it really takes land use and housing and puts it together with the understanding that you can't have one without the other, either way. And I think that's something that the legislature really needs to continue. We can't continue to divide the two issues. They're really one and the same in my eyes.
Well, we're very interested to see how this continues to develop. Ashley Bartley, State Representative from Franklin County, thank you so much for joining us today to discuss.
I was so happy to be here.
Well, our next guest is a co-sponsor of this bill that we are focusing on today, H-687. Seth Bongartz is a Democrat from Manchester, representing Bennington County. Excuse me. Representative Bongartz, welcome back to the program.
Well, welcome. Happy to be here.
Well, let's start by addressing some of Representative Bartley's concerns. You were listening on the line there. She said first that this bill, to her, doesn't strike her as a housing bill. It strikes her as a land use bill. What do you think of that critique?
She's right. This is a land use bill. It's a climate and human resiliency bill really seeks to do a handful of things. Let me back up for a second and say that last year in S-100, and by the way, I was the lead author on S-100 that resulted in the changes that we have to make it easier to build housing in downtowns, to which Representative Bartley was just talking about. So I'm a believer in building housing in the right places, and we've done a lot over the last 2 years to make that possible. So in S-100, partially at the request of a lot of people, we commissioned, I'll use the term commissioned, three studies. One from the Natural Resources Board, looking at how to make Act 250 work better, how to make governance work, how to make the whole apparatus work better and more effectively. The second was for the regional commissions, and in fact, they actually asked us to do this in the first instance, and we got really excited about it, which was to tell them to really move to a system of consistency across future land use maps across the regions. So we're all using the same language, we're all using the same categories, and that's really designed to help in the end product. It's really designed to help communities do, through better mapping, through consistency, to then allow communities to do better planning and making better decisions. And then the last thing we asked was for the Department of Housing and Community Development to take a look at the designation program and how to streamline it a little bit, and most importantly, how to bring some of the benefits of that program to rural Vermont. And they did that. And the great thing is that those three studies, which went all summer, and especially in the case of the NRB study, involved just dozens of people putting in hundreds and hundreds of hours at our request, came up with what turned out to be a pretty unified ask of us, which was to fix Act 250 governance. And this bill really fixes Act 250 governance and really puts Act 250 in position to be effective and efficient going into the next 50 years. The regions did, and that's just, anyway, a lot of work. And then the regions did great work and came up with the right categories, and including the notion of the tiers that emerged from this, from the combination of the NRB study and the regions working together and cross-pollinating those studies. And so we ended up with the three tiers came out of that. And then a designation program through a consultant hired by the department did a really good job of bringing that program, simplifying it, and figuring out ways to bring the benefits to more of rural Vermont. So this is very much a bill that benefits rural Vermont. So the bill...
I'm just going to jump in here real quick, Representative Bongartz, because we do have a caller on the line who's been waiting patiently with I think a question addressing some of what you just brought up here. Linda in Norwich is on the line. Linda, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. So what I want to just preface is to say I think at this point we all pretty much agree that we need more housing in Vermont, and we also want to maintain a healthy environment. So I understood about the Natural Resources Board and their stakeholder process, and that seemed like it was really good. That brought in the Scott administration officials, business groups, environmentalists, others, and they all agreed on a framework. And so my question, and I don't know whether both legislators are still available, but the question is, so do you think we can do both a healthy environment and more housing? And then my second part is, why isn't the governor supporting the framework that came out of the stakeholder process? Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. We have a representative, Seth Bongartz here with us now. Representative Bongartz, what are your thoughts on Linda's two questions there?
Yeah, so the first one, the answer is about whether we can do both is absolutely. And this is about making choices. What we've, you know, often had in the past is a really kind of a bit of a failure to make choices, and that results in sprawl, and, you know, we're losing a lot of forests. We're losing about 12,000 football fields of forest a year to unplanned development. We absolutely can, and what this bill really tries to do with Tier 1 is make it easier to build in our growth areas and in our villages, and we can talk about what the bill actually does in those circumstances in a minute. And then we look at critical resource areas, critical resources, natural resources, and set up a system for sort of making sure that we look at the environmental impacts of intrusion into those areas. And then, you know, the biggest thing we haven't talked about yet is everything in between, which is going to be most of the state, and that's the so-called Tier 2. The second part about why the governor ignored all of the work of the dozens and dozens of Vermonters and organizations, I can't answer that. But they did come together. You know, everything from the Niskiri's Association to the Vermont Chamber of Commerce to environmental groups, and they worked like dogs over the summer and came up with the foundation for the bill that we have put in place. And we actually, everything in that report, almost everything in the three reports is in this bill. That's what we did. We just had, it had to be pulled together and fleshed out, and that's what the committee did. And I think we did, frankly, excellent. They did excellent work. They get the real credit, and then we've built on their excellent work.
Well, it seems like critics of this bill are kind of coalescing around one key theme here, which Representative Bartley just brought up, is that they want to see more development quickly in rural areas and are concerned that perhaps their towns are not going to end up in this Tier 1A, this top tier for development that we've described. Yeah. First, Representative, I'm wondering if you could kind of explain what the process will be like for figuring out who else gets to be in that Tier 1A.
Yeah.
It's kind of being described as like a Chittenden County-specific tier.
Well, no, that's of course not true.
Yeah, tell us more.
What it is growth centers. I mean, the real game is going to be Tier 1B, so we can come back to that as it relates to housing. But Tier 1A are going to be your growth centers, the areas, you know, in Bennington County, the city of Bennington, Brattleboro, obviously Burlington, you know, White River Junction, you know, St. Albans. Those are your, you know, there's a lot, towns like that will be your growth centers. And they have to have a pretty in-depth apparatus for, they have to have sewer and water, they have to have a lot of elements in their planning and zoning and subdivision regs. And those areas in those towns that meet certain definitions and after they've gone through a process and approval by the board can be the 1A, and those areas would be exempt from Act 250. But when it as it relates to housing, the real game, that'll help. The real game is going to be 1B, I think, where hundreds of towns, well, I don't know, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say hundreds, but a whole lot of towns across Vermont, we made the bar as reasonable as we could possibly make it. And for those towns that qualify, they'll be able to build within the areas so designated up to 50 units of housing. And that's a lot of housing. That's a big project on 10 acres or less without Act 250 review. So, you know, it really is the case that this will benefit rural Vermont, because all you have to have, what you have to have in order to qualify for that is water or sewer or soils capable of handling a community system. And then you just have to have the basic town plan bylaws and subdivision regulations. So it's pretty low entry, pretty low barrier for entry, but you have to have enough so that we know that actual review is going on if you're talking about something like a 50-unit housing project. And by the way, I just want to say that so those will be the Tier 1A and Tier 1B areas, and then, you know, a relatively small part of Vermont will end up being Tier 3, and everything else in between is Tier 2, where not a whole lot changes. So, you know, when I don't mean to pick on her, and I don't want to do that, actually, but, you know, when she said it'll be harder to develop in Fairfax, well, that's just not the case. It'll be, if they don't go forward with this, and I don't know why they wouldn't, actually, with becoming a 1B, but if they don't, you know, then things basically won't change for them.
Okay. Well, I do think a lot of folks are wondering if, you know, they're in a specific town government right now, when and how am I going to figure out if this passes, what tier my town is in? How does that process work?
Well, you know, one of the ironies of this discussion is that we had a whole lot of people, especially from rural Vermont, coming into my committee and saying, have a long process. You know, have a process that involves the public and gives a lot of chance for participation. And so we built that in. We could have just, you know, we could have just written it and kind of made it all happen, but we wanted to have a public process because at its roots, by the way, Act 250 is about access to all Vermonters, you know, is giving access to all Vermonters and to the process and to discussion. That's its roots. And so we're doing that with this bill, and that's going to take a little bit of time. But we built the bill on our own we did do the exemptions in in S-100 last year, and we timed the bill in large measure to come into effect as those short-term measures expired. There wasn't an amendment. Representative Elder came into our committee and asked, well, would you consider extending those for 6 months, kind of, I'll say, just to make sure? And we said, sure, that's fine. And so we extended them for six more months just to make sure that the old exemptions continue until the new ones come into being. But, you know, this is important because what we're talking about here is the next 50 years of Act 250, and we're building a framework here between making the governance work well and this new framework of location-based jurisdiction, like the 1As and the 1Bs, and then the Tier 3s, where we're protecting natural resources.
We're also joined now by Brian Shoup. He's the head of the Vermont Natural Resources Council and has long been part of these conversations about Act 250 reform. Brian, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So you are generally very supportive of this legislation, right? Why is that?
Well, generally we are. Yeah, we participated in the Natural Resources Board stakeholder group. We were one of the many stakeholders, along with the Chamber of Commerce and Regional Planning Commissions and housing developers and engineers and attorneys who work with the development community. And we're really pleased to see the amount of consensus that built around this tiered system of concentrating development where we have infrastructure, where we have local oversight of development projects, and where we want to have compact residential developments built in the state.
Well, we got an email from a listener named Seth in South Burlington who wrote in with a concern. Seth writes, Act 250 isn't the reason Vermont has an affordable housing shortage. It's the reason our state is so beautiful that many people of means want to come and live here. Efforts to reform Act 250 won't do a thing to lessen the market pressures that price housing out of reach of young, working class, and low-income Vermonters. Reform is just a bonanza for developers and the wealthy. Brian, what would you say to somebody with that type of concern?
Well, I agree with him on several points. That one, Act 250 has been critical to the state's ability to maintain its natural resources, its environmental well-being, and its landscape. And I would also agree with him that Act 250 is not the cause of our national housing crisis. There are jurisdictions across the country that have it a lot worse, more affordability problems than Vermont does. That said, I think moving towards a tiered structure where Act 250 is not adding the value that perhaps it once did because you have a robust local planning process, you have infrastructure, is important. And also H 687 does a couple of other things. While it leaves most of the state pretty much the status quo, it does get a handle on kind of the road and driveway construction that's going up the sides of mountains that contributed to 50 or more landslides during the July flooding. And it also takes a step in the direction towards protecting critical state resources through Act 250, although that's really a process that we're a little concerned about. It won't take place for several years, so we will be watching that.
What concerns you?
Well, that we have a lot of critical resources in the state that don't that aren't seeing much protection from either the local jurisdictions and Act 250. Act 250 actually is jurisdiction for very little scattered residential development in the state goes through Act 250. Most land use decisions and land use decisions related to housing development are almost entirely a municipal issue, especially with single family home subdivisions around the state. So getting a handle on critical resource protection is a concern of ours, and the bill moves in that direction, but moves in that direction slowly.
Now, you kind of touched on this briefly, but there's these tier two areas that are being proposed under this new legislation that Representative Bongartz has been telling us about. Tier two would constitute the majority of the state, and there Act 250 legislation would remain mostly the same as it is now, except for this new road rule. It would essentially kick in the Act 250 review process for private road construction over 800 feet. Can you tell us a little bit more from your perspective what the significance of that rule is?
Yeah, I think there's two really significant things about it. One is we had a road rule in place for decades, and that was eliminated as part of a series of changes and compromises, I think around 2002-2004. This road rule actually improved some of the problems that existed with that one. And it basically says when you're extending, you know, shooting roads and long driveways into resource areas, into wildlife habitat, that you should have some review. It's not saying you can't develop those areas, but it's saying we need to see what your impacts are and address or mitigate those impacts if we can. So that's an important policy decision. And I think what's also important about it is a lot of people are going to avoid Act 250 by saying, well, I'm just not going to send my roads up the mountainside. I'm going to cluster my development near existing development or near existing roads. And we think that's a good thing.
Well, Brian, lastly, before we let you go and go back to our conversation with Representative Bongartz, as this bill continues to develop, there's also one in the Senate right now as well. What are you going to be keeping a close eye on over the coming weeks during this kind of tail end of the legislative session?
Well, I think most importantly, we are going to try to understand the criticisms and the concerns about the bill and see if there's a way to address them. But I'm afraid some of them are just based on a lack of understanding of how the bill works. And an example of that, and I'll give her the benefit of the doubt, I believe I heard Representative Bartley say that Fairfax would be harmed by this. They couldn't do development. My understanding of Fairfax is they do have a water system. They do have a sewer system. They serve several hundred existing uses in that community. I don't know whether they have existing capacity to allow for more development to hook onto those systems. I found that adding capacity to an existing system is certainly easier than building a new system. Fairfax is also a 10-acre town, meaning that they have zoning and subdivision in place. They have many of the ingredients for a Tier 1A town. And as the data that we have, there's 63 communities in the town that have those tools in place. 25% of the towns in the state have water and sewer, subdivision regulations, zoning regulations. So the idea that it's limited to Chittenden County is totally nonsense. So we really want to understand what those concerns are and try to get accurate information in front of people to better understand what the implications of this bill would be.
Brian Shoup with the Vermont Natural Resources Council. Thanks so much for talking with us today.
Sure, my pleasure.
And Representative Seth Bongartz, a co-sponsor of this bill we're discussing today, what are some of the ways in which you're doing just what Brian brought up at the end there, trying to work with folks who might disagree with this bill or not understand certain parts of it as we yeah. enter the second half of the session?
Yeah, I think I do think that the bigger problem is less disagreeing with it than it is understanding it. It's a complicated bill, and I'm somebody who, obviously, I helped draft it in the first instance and then, sat through all the hearings and the days and days and days and days and days of testimony in my committee. And, it's complex, and it takes a little while to get your arms around it. So I think that for some of the people who in rural communities who have misconceptions, because I think that's largely what it is about the bill, that, just spending time talking to my colleagues one-on-one and with other people doing the, my chair, Amy Sheldon, and I talking to people one-on-one and really just kind of getting our arms around their concerns. And, there may be something that we missed that there's a concern that, because that happened at the end as we listened to amendments. People brought amendments into the committee and we accepted a lot of them, said, that actually makes sense. And we supported them, and we'll obviously continue that process. I think what's going to happen is that the bill, obviously, it's going to the Senate. I think this will likely be the framework, because that's really what this bill is a framework. And then the committee will, using this as a framework, pull pieces from S-311 that make sense, that are a little bit more directly related to housing. This bill is important for housing. It sets the stage for a lot of housing. And it's a necessary and, it's a helpful ingredient.
One thing we haven't talked about yet, I believe a listener has a question about Cora in Burlington. So I'm going to just try to squeeze her in here. Cora, okay. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show. I just had a quick question about H-687 and how the bill will protect natural resources and protect Vermonters from flooding as climate change gets worse.
Yeah, thank you much, Cora. Yeah.
Thank you for asking that question, because when I reported this bill on the floor, I talked about all the work of so many people over the summer, and then I said, and then something else happened this summer that we can't forget about. We had our third 100-year flood in 13 years, and that's going to happen again and again. And so part of what this bill is about is resilience. And by the way, the flooding this summer, who got most affected? Who got wiped out? Low and moderate income houses washing down the river, be it Johnson, Londonderry, Ludlow, Montpelier, Barrie. And that is climate injustice. And this bill is really designed to take a look at some of the factors that lead to the flooding and say, A, let's stop making it worse, and B, give towns the latitude to shift their center of gravity, if that's what makes sense to them, away from rivers a little bit, and maybe do some restoration there, and do restoration coming down river corridors, and do what we can to, there's a lot we can do over time to lessen the flooding. But the first thing we want to do is stop making it worse, because it's a hell of a lot more expensive to build new housing than it is to hang on to housing that we already have, rather than having it washed down the river. So this is about our ecosystems. This is about the environment, but also the human environment. We're part of the environment too, and trying to make our environmental ecosystem in their own infrastructures to help protect us from flooding be in place and actually make them better. It's a great question.
Well, thank you, Cora, for listening and asking your question. And Representative Seth Bongartz of Bennington County, thank you so much for joining us today discussing this bill.
Thank you so much for having me.